going. Today's SET Colloquium speaker is Sukant Saran. He is going to talk about sculpting science, an experiment in art. So here is Sukant, and I give the podium right away to you.
Thank you, Satya. I'm going to read my talk because I don't want to miss out on things. And can we have this slide also? I guess so. Yeah, I think this is fine. So this talk is at the intersection of science, art, and philosophy. So you all do science every day and you see art every day. So I will start with philosophy. You know, philosophy has a somewhat bad reputation among scientists. There is a tendency among scientists to think that think of science not only as fully independent of philosophy, but also hindered by philosophy. So the attitude of majority of the scientists towards philosophy probably can be represented as this. So I have some bad news for all such disdainers of philosophy. Like it or not, believe it or not, this is also a philosophy. In fact, there is just no escape from philosophy. Historically, science grew out of philosophy. Science was called natural philosophy. All great scientists have expressed their philosophical views in one way or the other. Many discoveries and trends have been influenced by prevalent philosophy of the times. Advances in science, in turn, have redefined many features of philosophy. The best philosophy has always developed in line with and as a response to advances in science. The best science has always been attentive to philosophical and foundational issues. Philosophy and science form a continuum. Science answers questions about nature, and philosophy questions those answers. So it is important to understand that philosophy of science is not a prescription of science. It is a description of science, and there are many possible descriptions, many different views of science. So we may ask, what is philosophy after all? So in physics, we deal with laws. So are there laws of philosophy as well? So someone, in a light-hearted way, has formulated two laws of philosophy. So the first law of philosophy states that for every philosopher, there is an equal and opposite philosopher. And the second law states that they are both wrong. So this, of course, is stated as a joke. But it sums up the entire subject fairly well. People philosophize according to their mental makeups, likes, dislikes, preferences, and whatnot. Given the vast humanity and everyone being a philosopher, including those who don't care about philosophy, it is inevitable that there are opposing viewpoints. The first law is an admission of the fact that there is no ultimate and final philosophy. Every philosophical utterance can be contradicted and usually is. The subject of philosophy simply reflects the variety and complexity of life. The second law is actually a restatement of the commonly stated maxim that the truth lies somewhere in between the opposing views. It is our business to figure out where exactly for ourselves. So traditionally, philosophy means and includes five fields of study and discourse. I will mention them and state how science has intimate and necessary relation with each of them. Politics is the study of ideal social organization, and it is not the art of acquiring and keeping an office. The political philosophy is about monarchy, socialism, dictatorship, democracy, etc. scientific world and organizations are perhaps characterized by a feudalistic democracy or maybe a democratic feudalism. Ethics is considered to be the highest knowledge. It is the knowledge of good and evil. It is the wisdom of life. It is the study of ideal conduct. Ethics, and very often the lack of it, plays a very important role in scientific interactions. We even have a committee to look into ethical matters. Logic is the study of ideal method of thought and research, observation and introspection, deduction and induction, hypothesis and experiment, analysis and synthesis. These are the forms of human activity that logic tries to understand and guide. Logic forms the foundations of mathematics. Logic is, of course, a major topic in computer science. Metaphysics is the study of ultimate reality of things. It is the inquiry into the real and final nature of matter, of mind, and the interrelation of mind and matter in the process of perception and knowledge. The concerns of metaphysics and the concerns of science are exactly the same. Science without metaphysics is like eating plain boiled rice. And scientific food becomes much better if you add the curry of metaphysics to it. Aesthetics is the philosophy of art. It is the study of ideal form or beauty. Beauty is extremely important to human beings. Our search for beauty is a persistent theme in all spheres of life. We also create beauty whenever and wherever we can. We desire our homes, bodies, endeavors, and activities to be marked by beauty. We also want our science to be beautiful. It is this particular link between philosophy and science that I would elaborate upon. So there have been actually many attempts in the past to explore and describe this link. So allow me to go through this list briefly so that I can state clearly my stand on this subject of aesthetic and science. So Chandrasekhar finds beauty in the harmonious order that a mathematical representation of nature creates. He highlights the connection between beauty of the theory and the truth of the theory. He also evaluates scientific theories as work of art, with general theory of relativity as an example. James McAllister explains the historical progress of sciences in terms of aesthetic evaluation of scientific theory and gives an alternative model of scientific revolutions in opposition to that of Thomas Kuhn's paradigm shifts. McAllister's work has been modified and extended by Montano, who has discussed the beauty-truth relationship in science and mathematics. So as with every philosophical debate, there have been those who oppose the notion of aesthetic as the guiding principle for scientific development. A contrary view has been advanced by Marilyn Kane, in which the claims of scientists about the role of aesthetics in the scientific activity has been challenged. Philip Ball has argued that beauty, as characterized by symmetry, simplicity, and harmony, cannot be a good criterion for truth because history of science is full of many ideas and theories that have been considered beautiful but are wrong. So all the discussions from 1 to 5 are the discussions which are done within the historical context. So instead of charting a course in the history of science based on aesthetics or delving into the philosophical debates about the nature of beauty, Martin Kemp, who is a historian of science, urges to move beyond the simple and rather superficial influence of science on art or influence of art on science. According to him, interaction of science and art is centered on the issues of cognition, perception, intuition, mental and physical structures, the communicative and social actions of images. For him, aesthetic is a shared instinct along arts and sciences, and beauty in science must be sought in its human aspects its ingenious experimental design, elegance of theoretical logic, gentle clarity of exposition, and imaginative leaps of reasoning. A more down-to-earth approach has been advocated by Maura Flannery in the context of science education. Staying clear of philosophical speculation, the aesthetic aspects have been identified in the daily practice of science. My own views on aesthetic of science have been influenced and confirmed by these last two expositions. So, what is aesthetic experience? One view claims that things are intrinsically beautiful, while the other stresses that the beauty is creation of mind. So, we will ignore these two extreme views and other philosophical intricacies. We shall consider the aesthetic experience as an active emotional interplay between the subject and the object. The aesthetic experience, it must be mentioned, is not about beauty only. It would cover a range of emotional responses: beautiful, sublime, tragic, comic, picturesque, ugly, novel, and others. So, beauty is readily recognizable and freely invoked, but very hard to define. We do not need any training to appreciate beauty. Of course, there are societal and cultural influences involved in aesthetic judgment, but even there, the experience itself is unreasoned, spontaneous, and automatic. It would not be an exaggeration to say that there seems to be a biological basis to the aesthetic experience. Mind craves for order and searches for pattern, recognizes rhythm, and delights in harmony and simplicity. I am sure there is an evolutionary explanation for the development of this innate response in human beings. We are biologically programmed to recognize, isolate, and appreciate beauty in nature, in art, in science, or for that matter, anything. So, it would be impossible to talk about beauty in science without considering what beauty is in general. So, let us look at some examples that would be considered as beautiful by most of the people. So, natural sceneries are considered beautiful. Encountered suddenly with an enchanting sunset scene, most of us will exclaim without thinking, "Oh, that's beautiful." Others may be moved to make the same comment on seeing a bunch of flowers. Human beings often find other human beings, maybe a particular person, beautiful. The architectural beauty of Taj Mahal in the moonlight will captivate many. All over the world, all cultures find animals and babies very beautiful. The same response is encountered in the when you see the art, while seeing the work of art. Even an old, small, broken sculpture can be considered beautiful, or for that matter, a work of decorative art produced at home. Beauty, however, is not confined only to these examples where objects are clearly defined. Abstract designs have the capacity to hold the gaze of the viewer and evoke varied responses. Relationships, procedures, concepts, etc. are also considered beautiful. So, coming to the question, what is beautiful in science, we first make an assertion that the reasons, quote unquote reasons, for calling anything beautiful by a common man are the same ones that would make a scientific concept beautiful to the scientists. So, we to explore the aesthetic dimensions of science, we must recognize that there are at the outset two kinds of sciences. One is called the public science and other the private science. Public science is the science of textbook, classrooms, lectures, journals, and other media. The public science is presented very carefully and logically. It represents a well-ordered system of thought which insists on being objective and factual. It is also the public image of science. However, not much emphasis is given to beauty. Sometimes popular books and lectures do mention aesthetic aspect of science, but they always keep the objective part in the front. The aesthetic dimensions are hidden. Private science is the science of laboratories, discussions, guesses, hunches, flashes, accidents and discoveries. The very process of doing science is messy and disordered. The scientist away from the public eye is like any other human being, subjective, opinionated and emotional. His personal relationship with his data or discovery or method is irrational and is driven by emotion rather than logic. And importantly, it is in private that the scientists acknowledge the presence of beauty in their enterprise and many times use the aesthetic criteria for making decisions. Away from the public eye, the aesthetic dimension is explicit. So, further exploring the aesthetic dimension in science, I will now look at the scientific practice itself and present examples where the scientific enquiry meets the aesthetic in variety of ways and contexts. It is not uncommon to come across scientists who find the objects of their study beautiful. Biologists will find the structure, the living structures of living systems utterly fascinating. Astronomers will think of pictures of celestial objects almost with reverence. The beauty of a snowflake may send a physicist into a deep contemplative silence, while the beauty of a molecular structure can make a chemist talk non-stop. Mathematicians routinely refer to beauty in their work, and mathematics inspires a wide variety of beautiful artwork. An earth scientist's fascination with geological structures is easily understandable. Physical processes themselves are beautiful and often create evocative structures, kind of nature's abstract art. Very frequently, new techniques like high-speed photography reveal complex and beautiful patterns. So, this recognition and appreciation of beauty in the object of study is a powerful driving force for the scientific investigation. Next, we look at the aesthetics of the scientific enquiry itself. Now, scientific enterprise is a human activity, and like all such activity, it carries the signatures of being done by human beings. It has dramatic, tragic, comic, grotesque or sublime elements. Science is also distinctly characterized by the search of novel, new theory, new result, new idea, and the excitement associated with it. It can also be safely said that for many scientists, the motive force and the stuff of their daydreams is the thrill of discovery. Many great scientists have described a heady, a kind of spiritual feeling associated with discovery. However, discoveries are rare and they do not happen every day. Most scientists derive pleasure and satisfaction from day-to-day routine humdrum research, solving little problems in the laboratory, developing clever tricks, mathematical tricks, and such are the sources of happiness for the scientist. There is a tension inherent in the development of an idea. A successful creation is a resolution of that tension, just like a piece of, and there is of course pleasure in deeper understanding of nature and pleasure in learning. So, it is aesthetic that drives science at a personal level. In addition to the beautiful objects of inquiry and pleasures associated with it, with the intellectual inquiry, there are certain aspects and features of the natural world and also of science which are considered beautiful. Much of the scientific thinking revolves around these general concepts, and they are shared across many diverse fields. So, order is a central aesthetic quality in science. Science is fundamentally a search for order in the world around us. The mind can sense order even in the apparently completely chaotic situations. Order gives us feeling of security, order makes up our comfort zone. If the mind does not see order, it creates it. One important manifestation of order is hierarchy. There are hierarchies inherent in the organization of matter from subatomic particles to stellar bodies and in the organic form from macromolecules to ecosystems. Hierarchies are beautiful examples of order in the world and of the human desire to understand it. The order and hierarchies seen in nature are made visible in science as classification, a time-honored activity in science. The features that govern and steer classifications are pattern and rhythm, balance and harmony, and simplicity. Pattern is in fact a manifestation of order. One of the most pervasive patterns in nature is rhythm, a temporal pattern. As an aesthetic quality, rhythm is also the defining characteristic of life. The dynamism of living things is manifest in the life rhythms, which are in turn deeply connected with the rhythms of non-living world, to the movements of earth and moon. Balance and harmony are also aesthetic qualities, where the balance, when the balance is perfect, it is called symmetry, a concept that is important to all branches of science. Very often there is an interplay of symmetry and asymmetry that is both scientifically important and aesthetically attractive. Confronted with the enormous complexity in this world, the mind has a tendency to simplify. Science and simplification go hand in hand. Simplicity is a prized aesthetic quality, not only in science but everywhere. Simplicity in science is intimately connected with the idea of abstraction in science. Abstraction is ubiquitous in science. With the very existence of physical or intellectual entity is abstracted to measurements and numbers. If we cannot experiment with it, measure it, put numbers to it, for science it does not exist. Real-time behavior is abstracted into equations. Diagrams are the result of abstracting natural forms, shapes, and procedures. The natural processes are abstracted as, natural processes themselves are abstracted as models and theories. Scientific explanation is an abstracted and a simplified representation of reality, just like a painting, a sculpture, or a poem. So, in opposition to simplicity, nature as well as science displays complexity. Human mind has features that enable it to confront the complexity without trying to simplify or even understand it. It's like enjoying rains without bothering about the complex dynamics of the individual raindrops. Complexity can inspire feelings of perplexity, serenity, awe, or respect. In short, an aesthetic response. It seems that mind actually likes an interplay of simplicity and complexity. If simplicity has its aesthetic appeal, so has its opposite. A great example of this duality are the iconic diagrams of Ramoni Cajal. This is great science and this is also great art. The mind has the ability to appreciate both sides of this duality. The mind craves unity and simplicity, but it also craves variety. Now, to summarize and conclude the argument so far, the private side of science is neglected in the exposition of science, resulting in the objective-subjective split. Despite the fact that the public sees science as a cold, unemotional, and unapproachable, scientists know that science is a passionate engagement full of pleasure, beauty, and excitement. The objective investigation of natural processes are without doubt fueled by the subjective desire to know. And there is, of course, ambition. Subjectivity is firmly situated at the very base of objective inquiry. In science, objective is not at war with the subjective. They are mutually reinforcing facts, aspects. Inclusion of aesthetic in scientific discourse gives us a richer, truer picture of science, more exciting and fascinating. Aesthetic result in heightened and enhanced perception of the natural world, which would in turn create a humanistic science instead of robotic science. So with this background in aesthetic or science, I will now talk about the interaction of science and art and show my work as an example of that. Truth and beauty appear to be the real goals of science as well as art. So this talk is of course about scientific truth and artistic beauty, but it is as much about artistic truth and scientific beauty. So before I talk about my recent work, it would be appropriate to tell how I came to it. There were two strands of activity in my earlier work. One strand was that of abstract artwork made by pen, and the second was that of science-based digital artwork. In few slides that follow, I will show some examples of these two. The abstract work was dominated by two themes, namely duality and entanglement, as encountered in daily life. We face duality in form of good and bad, high and low, big and small, passive and active, yin and yang, and whatnot. We also find ourselves entangled in a web of personal and professional relationships. So here are two more examples of that. So these works were inspired by what was happening to me in my life, but those details are not important. I could abstract from those experiences an image that played with the form. So this work resulted in two exhibitions. So in the science-based digital work, I took a particular topic which attracted me at that time, or a concept of science, and transformed it into a juxtaposed image using diagrams, photographs, etc., and their digital manipulation. I will show some examples of that. So the claim of astrology that the planets are able to influence the life on Earth has never been substantiated by science. What is certain, however, is that the entire history of life, from proteins to cells to life forms to superorganisms to ecosystems to biosphere, is governed by the arrangement and interaction of just 20 amino acids, a fact which is much more remarkable and absolutely astonishing. So here the evolutionary history of life has been presented as a horoscope with amino acids replacing the planets. The strange world of quantum mechanics manifests in highly intriguing ways. In a particular description, two particles or states are linked together or entangled in such a way that one cannot be described or studied without mentioning the other, even if the objects are separated and cannot communicate with each other. Entanglement has many applications in quantum information theory, quantum computers, and philosophical interpretation of quantum mechanics. So here, a stylized bra and ket vectors are shown as entangled, creating an illusionistic figure. In the background is the background microwave radiation image of the early universe. We tend to think of matter as something that fills the space and move through it in time. The reality might be a lot different. In theoretical physics, geometrodynamics is an attempt to describe space-time and associated phenomena completely in terms of geometry. The particles are not something separate from space-time, but particular distortions of space-time itself. Then everything is just space-time, a part of getting curled up in a specific way, thus becoming a particle, and interacting with others formed in the similar way. The metaphysical concept of oneness and this scientific theory are amazingly close. A human brain consists of neurons as well as what are known as glial cells. In fact, there are more glial cells than neurons. Glia support the neurons physically and biochemically. They help the neurons to make connections, supplying them with nutrients, etc., while neurons carry out the so-called mental tasks. This is an astounding example of mind-body duality right at the cellular level. So the digital work which I described, is, I gave some examples, this also resulted in 3 exhibitions, and one of my work called Quantum Superposition was gifted by TFR to ETH Zurich. This work hangs in the quantum computing section for in the Institute of Theoretical Physics at ETH. Now, since since 2012, I have shifted from 2 to 3 dimensions. This change was part of one's artistic development, and well, it was part of the artistic development. The 2 strands of my artistic activity, namely the abstract work and the science-based work, have got intertwined. I make sculptures which embody or begin with a scientific idea, and at the same time, I play with the form in such a way that sculpture should suggest something to the viewer who is not interested in the science part of it. Most of these works are related to physics, and they reflect the fact of my training. Although my first attempts were of limited success, I have included 2 of them here to show you how the artistic idiom developed. So a sculpture and an installation based on the periodic table of isotopes was made. The isotopes are arranged according to the number of neutrons on x-axis and number of protons on the y-axis. The installation is made up of aluminium rods that have been fixed on an aluminium base plate. Each rod represents an isotope. The height of the rod is related to the lifetime of the unstable isotope. The scale is arbitrary. The line of stability is represented by the longest rod with silver color. The color of the rod represents the dominant decay mode. This is a slightly close-up view of the same. So I have always been fascinated by the phenomenon of pair production. The process of conversion of a photon of appropriate energy into a particle and an antiparticle is very dramatic and mysterious. So a copper wire sculpture was made as a direct rendition of the bubble chamber photograph. So at this stage, I realized that I am making 3-dimensional diagrams, and I wanted to go beyond rendition and model making. So I decided to give equal importance to form as I was giving to the concept. The inspiration to do so came from my earlier abstract work, where I had played with the form. At the same time, I got interested in clay as a medium. I find it very stimulating and at the same time satisfying to juxtapose clay, probably the most ancient artistic material, and the modern scientific idea. Also, the flexibility offered by clay is just unparalleled. So here is an artistic representation of a wave function. If you consider time along the vertical axis, then you can see a traveling wave packet, a bundle of concentrated energy along the trajectory. Some movement is suggested by the wavelets. Notice that the form and shape have been given as much attention as the scientific concept, and it is certainly looking less like a diagram. So if you remember the work of geometric particles, you will recall that the particle is considered as a particular distortion of the space-time itself. One easy way to visualize is to consider a whirlpool moving in water. The whirlpool is nothing but water itself. The same concept was tried to make 2 sculptures. So a distortion in a smooth cylindrical surface is moving along the vertical axis. Here you see the distortion to be random. But there is every reason to suppose that the distortion is mathematically tractable. We really don't know, so there is a scope of taking liberties. In another version of the sculpture, the distortion of the space-time was represented by a simple sine wave. While discussing the aesthetic aspect of science, we had come across the idea of duality of simplicity and complexity, of order and disorder. Here I present them and emphasize, I represent them in a single sculpture and emphasize the point that in nature we find order and disorder merging into each other seamlessly. Technically, in this work the disorder is supporting the order, but that is just a matter of preference, and it makes the sculpture more interesting architecturally. The duality makes another appearance as wave particle duality in quantum mechanics. Particles are waves and waves are particles. The concept permeates all of the modern physics. There is something metaphysical about this duality. I have tried to bring in this duality by showing particles coalescing to make waves. If you scan the sculpture from bottom to top, and waves becoming localized particle if you scan it from top to bottom. I have already mentioned my fascination with pair production, but that is also a kind of duality. However, we know very little about the mechanism of that underlies this transformation. But there can be speculations. So, to depict the appearance of particle-antiparticle pair, I have here used the concept of the half turn of the famous Möbius strip. Maybe, just maybe, the underlying dynamics involves a Möbius topology. So, sculptures about science may not be necessarily of conceptual and philosophical nature. You need not know about the latest development in science. Ordinary processes of our everyday life can also provide the inspiration. We have all seen this steam coming out of a teacup. The steam, of course, is rising from every part of the exposed surface. Nevertheless, it comes together to form visible wisps. The dynamics of this process is not very understood, very well understood, and this makes room for artistic speculation. So, this sculpture embodies my own limited understanding of evaporation. So, a very simple and a very beautiful experiment was done by Pound and Rebka in 1960, in which gamma rays were emitted from the top of the tower and measured by a receiver at the bottom of the tower. It is a gravitational redshift experiment which measures the change of frequency of light moving in a gravitational field. Around the same time, a British artist, Bridget Riley, unaware of the experiment or the significance, made an artwork called The Fall, which uncannily captured the central idea of the experiment. A great example of same idea being expressed in two different places and disciplines independently of each other. Here is my tribute to both of them. The story of an apple falling on Newton's head leading to discovery of laws of gravitational is obviously made up. In any case, his great achievement undoubtedly was to demonstrate that the force that makes the apple fall into the tree is the same one which keeps the moon in the orbit around the Earth. Earlier, I had made this digital work where I showed moon morphed as an apple and with an apple tree in the foreground, and then I made a sculpture out of it. So piano curve is an example of space filling curve whose range contains the entire two dimensional unit square. So three iterations of the piano curve constructions are shown here. Now these iterations are done in a systematic and a regular way, but it is also possible to fill the unit square in an irregular and random manner also. And now imagine the same exercise being done on the surface of a sphere where a closed curve can cover the entire surface. So all the physics is essentially about the study of interactions. So imagine a W-shaped curve and its mirror image, an M-shaped curve. Now we translate one of them and we get this picture. And this was made into this sculpture depicting interaction. That it is reminiscent of a Feynman diagram is not accidental. Now I would like to talk about a series of sculptures that were made depicting the early stages of development of the human embryo. Now, development of a complete body from a single cell is one of the most complicated and beautiful processes. It has been studied in great detail and the intricacies are mind-boggling. What follows here is a watered-down version. So the fertilized egg gets divided into two and then four and then more cells. The two-cell stage is depicted here, and all the complex dynamics that is happening inside is suggested by the motif on the surface of the cell. So as the number of the cell increase, they start looking like this mulberry fruit. And this mass of cell is called morula, which is derived from the morum, the Latin name from the of the fruit. So this stage was depicted in this sculpture. Now differentiation of the embryonic cell is the dominant theme in the development. The first differentiation of cell takes place at this stage. The outer cells of the compacted morula form a hollow cavity, and the inner cells, called the inner cell mass, migrate to one side of the cavity. So a small sculpture was made depicting this stage. It is this inner cell mass that develops further. The inner cell mass then lifts itself and forms two cavities and two layers. Okay, so it was somewhere here, now it has lifted itself and there are two layers formed with two cavities. So which are called hypoblast and epiblast. This is a bilaminar embryonic disc which is formed there. This is also a stage where the changes in the two layers determine the polarity, that where the head would be. So artistic liberty was taken to make this sculpture where the bilayer is as shown as curved, and the impending onset of polarity was shown by the device shown at the back. A structure called primitive streak appears in the epiblast. Appearance of primitive streak establishes the bilateral symmetry. These ideas resulted in making this sculpture. Primitive streak is formed when where the future trunk would be. The head would form later on the other side. The first visible sign of our body is made where our bottom would be. So this interesting fact should make us quite humble actually. The physical changes in the epiblast is actually a result of the biochemical changes that take place in the hypoblast. The two layers interact in a complex way to ascertain the polarity. In another attempt, liberty was taken to show the two layers separately, highlighting the interaction between them. So by 17th day, a third layer called mesoderm appears between the two layers, and which is as a result of migration of the epiblast cells. Through the primitive streak. So there is a primitive streak and the epiblast cells migrate down to form the not only the mesoderm, but these cells also displace the hypoblast layer and form what is known as endoderm. The top layer now will be called ectoderm. The entire developed body is made out of these three layers. At this stage, the ectoderm starts to invaginate. On 20th day, we have a well-defined neural groove here, which later on detaches itself from the epiblast. And this is the beginning of the making of your spinal cord and your brain. This sculpture highlights the recurrent and the dominant theme of folding in the development process. Now, this is the dorsal view of the embryo on its 20th day, showing the formation of the neural tube here. By 22nd day, the neural tube has started closing and the underlying mesoderm has started differentiating into structures called somites, which are the progenitors of the vertebrae. A day later, the zipping of the neural tube is complete. This sculpture, again highlighting the process of folding, was made to depict this process. The folding is taking place not only in one layer. The three layers elongate and fold in such a manner that the endoderm forms what is known as the gut tube. This is the formation of the gut tube. The opening of the gut tube into the yolk sac, what is known as the yolk sac, narrows and will later develop into the umbilical cord. Thus we get three layers which have coaxial cylindrical morphology. So broadly speaking, ectoderm makes the outer skin, the mesoderm apart from the vertebrae makes other bones and muscles, the endoderm makes the lining of the gut and the organs as side branches of the gut tube. So just 4 weeks after fertilization, the embryo has started looking like this. Faint echoes of human form are just discernible. The development has been incredibly fast. These buds will develop into limbs. The complete set of vertebrae head has formed. The embryo now has a working central nervous system and a primitive heart that is pumping blood. It has a circulatory system that is carrying that blood to different parts of the embryo. Almost all organs have started to form and are functional to a degree. This creature, 1 or 2 centimeters in length, is living inside the womb of an unaware mother. This sculpture was made as an abstract portrait of this being. A huge debate surrounds the issue of the beginning of the consciousness of the embryo. In my view, our friend here is conscious, having really deep thoughts that form the basis of all later thinking and feeling. and is probably dreaming also. So this brings me to the end of my talk, and I would like to conclude and summarize with three quotations. One should never declare that the thesis laid down by rational formulation are the only possible presupposition of human reason. There is no science without fancy, and there is no art without facts. If the path is beautiful, let's not ask where it leads. Thank you.
Thank you, Sukant, for nicely bringing out the interplay between philosophy, science, art, and also digging through a number of your own work, making this connection very, very personal at the same time, quite communicative.
I'll take questions if there are any.
Questions?
Yeah.
We'll ask later, but
you ask here.
Since we have not talked about these things for some time, I'm curious to know, where will you go from here?
Well, I think the last one answers you partly. The series which I have made is not really complete yet. I have 3 or 4 ideas where I will take it further before I complete that series.
Yeah, but there's a break from physics and other things. So I want to know, I was curious to just...
Break from physics?
In the sense, those kind of topics, when you started with, but this is elaborate and very involved.
Yeah, this is a series. Those were individual sculptures.
Yeah.
So, see, if...
Huh? One might get caught into this for many, many days, and because then it development, that's a physical development, then there is a mental development, there is a...
Well, if it goes in that direction, why not?
No, it's okay.
So it will be very difficult for me to say exactly where I will go, but one thing is that I will complete this series or bring it to some kind of completion. And secondly, I think there is my own view. I started with physics because I have been trained like that. But now, as I am going sort of making more and more of them, I am finding is that there are ideas across disciplines which are very attractive. And usually what I do is I make a sculpture or any artwork of whatever I like. So I think now my work would be more on a level where variety of sciences would interact with each other and how they interact in real life, and then if possible to make an aesthetic representation of that. Yes.
Regarding the medium that you chose,
yes.
Is that choice reflecting the ease with which you could get into that, or is it some other reason?
Ease.
I also noticed that they are mostly unfired.
Hmm. Yeah, because I don't have a kiln. Okay, so that's a separate thing. Ease. Clay is not an easy medium at all. I mean, it requires a lot of physical work, and it's not an easy medium at all. What actually happened to me was that at that stage, around 2012, when I started doing all this, I had a realization that I am imagining things in 3 dimensions and I am translating those in 2 dimensions, okay, which I thought was kind of not a good thing to do. So if I am imagining them in 3 dimensions, let me make them in 3 dimensions. So I had no idea about it, but so I learned how to make things with clay. And then I started with, because clay is a very satisfying material. It is something which is very ancient, and the techniques which are used actually can be taught in a week or two to anybody. Okay, and then you are on your own. So, but making clay things, especially, making something like a pot or something is a different thing, where there is a wheel or something. But making these Sculptures with clay, this is not easy, it takes a lot of time, and the failure rate is as high as 60 to 70%. Yes. First in the room. I think all of us have spiritual bent of mind.
So what Pauli is saying there, is this the same that was getting reflected much later by Douglas Fairbairn was trying to?
I wouldn't be able to answer that. Probably, yes.
Because he is emphasizing on rational
Pauli. Yes. No, but this sentiment has been expressed by many. This, yes, yes. You probably are right. I am not too aware of that. But this sentiment has been expressed by many. I mean, this is not for the first time that somebody is saying that the rationality is not the only way, you know, human reason works. Okay? Human reason works in a variety of mind is a very complicated thing. Rationality is a very small part of it. That's right. That's right, that's right.
So are you going to sculpt some of those ideas?
Yes, actually I didn't want to say all that. Yes, you're right. Yes. So the epistemology, the mind-matter relationship in the, as you perceive, you know, in the context of perception and in the context of knowledge acquiring, you know, this mind and matter are interacting. Okay, so this interaction is very fascinating, and I do plan to do something about it. I hope I am able to do.
Okay, I think I will see more questions. So once again, let us
one short thing.
Okay. Yeah.
This I talked about in the beginning of the talk. Any one thing which, of course, you are very familiar with, and something which is not left out from the talk was of science fiction. As movies, not written science fiction, but visual science fiction. So, do you have something to say about that?
Actually, Unni, there is a little problem there, because most of the things which we get as science fiction is actually technology fiction.
But something which go beyond, I mean, there are some examples.
Well, there are some examples. Yeah, I mean, Solaris, for example, is probably one of those examples. Yes, I mean, I cannot plan these things. You know, it has to evolve. It has to, you know, it has to merge into the life experience. It has to merge with my understanding. You know, so it cannot be planned in that way.
Well, let's thank Sukant for his.
Thank you.
Life sciences thing. So it's like.